Welcome to episode 3 of the Paddle and Portage podcast. I'm here with Joe Fredericks.
Ah, the great Baxley on a sunny day. Look at you.
Take the microphone.
You know, I've known you for a long time now. And people who've been listening to the podcast and our stories about the Boundary Waters that we've shared about other people and some of our own adventures, of course, along the way, too. There's one thing that I've gotten to know about you. It's that you're one who isn't afraid to take the trail less traveled. And it's something I appreciate about you. And sometimes you're willing to even go where there is no trail, let alone one that's less traveled.
Well, it couldn't be more true, and to use a maybe outdated colloquialism, that is certainly the pot calling the kettle black. But yes, there are an infinite amount of adventures to take if you're just willing to step off the trail.
The sounds of bushwhacking.
Ah! Oh, hey.
We're following this rut of an old two-track cart path logging road.
John? Okay, you're to our right.
Well, we're taking our first little water break. We started out, you know, with a theory that we needed to get kind of uphill of the flowage, and that proved to be just ridiculously thick scrub. Buck started carrying the canoe and was just shredding through the forest, but it was grueling, very unyielding terrain. Then we found our way back down in the wash. Anybody want to give a report?
It's been better down here, better than I thought it was going to be. It's been kind of somewhat open, able to move down here, and definitely need a little break, but we're just about halfway, maybe not quite.
We maybe been going a little over an hour?
Yeah, I'd say.
Yeah.
Well, we're doing all right.
Yeah.
John, you're doing great.
It's been fun.
With the tank.
Yes.
Pushing forward.
The Kevlar tank.
Yeah.
Living on the edge of the wilderness leaves little room for complaints when it comes to having access to incredible adventures. One of the perks of proximity to our beloved BWCA is developing a deep relationship with the local entry points, portages, lakes, and numerous routes possible for any given trip. There is a familiarity that develops over time that could be comparable to a lifelong friend or a spouse. The trips are consistent and reliable, and the scenery doesn't change often, aside from a blowdown or fire. One of the challenges, though, of consistency and stability is the diminished opportunity for new discoveries or uncharted terrain. Curiosity is a driving force for many in our wilderness clan. It prompts me to wonder, what's around the next corner or over that ridge? Or beyond that vista, and entices me to explore that unknown. It's probably why most of us were drawn to the Boundary Waters in the first place. And it was that curiosity that elicited an immediate and emphatic affirmation of commitment when my good friend Buck Benson called me up and said he wanted to plan a bushwhacking excursion into the BWCA. We assembled a small group of three and began plotting our course. Each of us had our own reasons for joining the trip. As the rookie bushwhacker in the Boundary Waters, mine was mainly curiosity.
I'm John Oberholzer, bushwhack aficionado and fun lover of bushwhacking.
Buck Benson, and I love any kind of adventure. Bushwhacking is a funny term, isn't it? Mm-hmm. You know, there's no trail, basically, is what you're saying. And you make your own trail, and you figure out what direction you have to go, how far you have to go, what kind of terrain you'll be passing through. Or maybe you don't even know that. You know you only want to go to this place, and you're at your current place, so you just take the compass and head that direction. But I learned to enjoy bushwhacking without even thinking about what it was when I was spending my time all over Cook County fishing brook trout as a kid. And the only way you're going to get to most brook trout places is just that. You know what direction you're going to go, and you might have an idea how far it is. The beaver dam you're looking for, the spring hole or the secret lake, whatever it is. So it wasn't necessarily overnights. It was really just take off and go.
For me, it's kind of that desire to look at the blank place on the map, you know, that sort of old idea of like, what's out there, and you know, what will we see? And so it's intriguing to just see a blank place on the map and think what will we find there. But I love doing it with friends too. You know, it's so awesome to be out with, you know, a group of people who, like Buck said, you know what you signed up for, and then you stick with that concept. You know, no one gets sour or angry, and I love doing things that are hard and kind of uncomfortable with people who are cheerful about it and doing it with a smile on their face. That to me is, no matter what it is, it's awesome. Bushwhacking puts you in that pretty fast.
Hope you're enjoying this episode of the Paddle and Portage Podcast, brought to you by Women's Wilderness Discovery in Ely, Minnesota, the gateway to the Boundary Waters. Experience canoe country in all seasons with their outfitted guided trips, day trips, and workshops. You can visit them online at womenswildernessdiscovery.com. Also find them on Instagram and Facebook. Discover your inner strength outdoors at Women's Wilderness Discovery. This episode of Paddle and Portage is also brought to you by Tuscarora Lodge and Canoe Outfitters, located on Round Lake. Tuscarora is a full-service Boundary Waters outfitter serving Gunflint Trail entry points, now booking 2024 canoe trips and cabins. Check them out online at TuscaroraCanoe.com or at Tuscarora Canoe on Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook. And support for Paddle and Portage comes from Ely Outfitting Company, located in downtown Ely. Their friendly and knowledgeable team shares expert Boundary Waters trip planning and routing advice. Ely Outfitting Company offers complete outfitting services, lightweight canoe rentals, and professionally guided tours. Now booking 2024 canoe trips, plan your Boundary Waters trip now at ElyOutfittingCompany.com. Successful Boundary Waters canoe trips start with Ely Outfitting Company.
There was more to this particular trip than just bushwhacking. Buck's inspiration for this location came in the form of a desire to explore a unique landscape with a unique history.
I kind of wanted to look around in the Boundary Waters and do just what we ended up doing. It was to find a location that's not easy to do, that's pretty remote, and that's challenging. And as I looked at the map, I see there it is. It's equal distance from the lakes that you can paddle above it as it is from the ones below. So there's no easy route. It's all any direction's hard. And it had the big high hills that make it a lot more interesting that way. I settled on this one, and then as I brought it up to you guys, of course, then John went to check out the history and to get mm-hmm. some maps, and he came up with the photographs from 1934. You know, another thing that led me to this was seeing that railroad grade, and there had been a big logging company and a lot of logging, which showed up on 1934 maps, that it made it more historically interesting.
Yeah.
It wasn't always just a, I shouldn't call it just a wilderness. I mean, that's perfect, but, you know, there was activity that we wouldn't think of now. And it was a lot of people.
One of you referenced that the logging stopped right near here. Go ahead, Opie.
Those 1934 photographs, those showed kind of a, you know, these old skid roads and stuff that kind of radiated out from this logging camp. And so, you know, you wondered in your mind's eye, you know, what age forest will this be? If it was all cut in the 30s and maybe a little bit after, it might have a youngish look to it. But then it looked like from there that that state wasn't cut. The roads didn't go up as far. They kind of ended there near the south shore of it.
So we set off into the unknown. We didn't know what we were going to encounter, and that's what we wanted. It's also what we found.
We're at about 1,700 feet, a little less, and we're going to go up to 2,000 something. Yeah, well, there's 2,000 right there. So actually the lake itself
under.
Will be a tad under. So we're going to go up about 300 feet along the way. That's pretty gradual over a mile.
Up and down.
Yeah, you're right.
And what's the total distance from here to there?
I think it's a little over a mile.
Yeah.
Almost a mile and a half by the time we wander. You know, sticking on ground, we can walk.
Yeah.
Avoiding the swamps and the alders and the balsams.
Yeah.
They're really tough to haul a canoe through.
Amen.
There was one spot where I was coming down back into the creek when we were headed out, and I was on this, you know, big scree pile up above the creek, and the whole thing just caved out beneath me, and I kind of like leaned into the hillside to not go down with it, but it was a little unnerving to feel the bottom drop out for a second.
Yeah, it's so easy to do something critical to your feet in loose rock and these kind of obstacles all over the ground, holes. You just have to go slow enough.
Yeah.
Going slow is not OB's, John Oberholzer's forte.
Well, sometimes with the canoe, it feels good when you got a line just to charge, but I'm mindful of, like, I'm with you guys. I don't want to twist an ankle or break a leg or anything like that. That'd be bad. Could you imagine?
It'd be tough coming out.
You'll go get the search and rescue guys. You're where?
No, we just leave you here.
Look at this little amazing spot. Just a little boulder garden. And a white, stunted white pine, kind of a bonsai white pine living back in here. Wow. That thing is really cool looking.
All these Misqua Hills.
That's Eagle Mountain.
Nice.
Very cool. Fun to be up here and get oriented around all these Misqua Hills, especially the highest one off there, about 5.5 miles.
What are about our elevation right now?
We're about 2,000.
Yes.
That's about, so that'd be
2301 Eagle Mountain.
2301.
And right behind us is 2260. We're headed for Eagle Mountain next.
What are we going to need, about half a day?
A little mountaineering. Oh, moosineering.
These moosineers are out of control.
They are.
After hours of slow route finding, attentiveness to place and our location in that place, we wove our way around washes, up ravines, around and through thickets of trees. As we traveled, the excitement built. As with any adventure into the unknown, there are hazards, some significant and legitimate risks, that are enhanced when moving the adventure off the established routes and mapped trails. I spoke with avid Boundary Waters traveler and wilderness operations leader for the Tofty Ranger District of the Superior National Forest about the right attitude and approach to taking the adventure off trail.
My name is Dan Dish. Anytime we are recreating, either in the backcountry or in the front country, you know, we should always be thinking of the seven leave no trace principles. So as it pertains to bushwhacking, the plan ahead and prepare, probably the most important. Know what you're getting into. You need to have, you know, rock solid navigational skills, map reading, using a compass, beyond the use of electronics. You know, and I think people should ask themselves before doing an excursion like this is, would we do this if we didn't have electronics? And if you can answer yes, then okay, because it happens. You know, your batteries run out or you just don't get good satellite reception, whatever, and now you're a mile to 5 miles away from the nearest travel route, and now you got to be able to find your way out, right? That coupled with the devices that can, you know, relay like messages, like the Zoleus and the InReach, Garmin InReach. Mm-hmm. So if you do get into trouble, I can call out for help. And that is something that really makes me nervous. It gives people a false sense of security that they can do this. They can take on undue risk. They have a safety blanket in, they have this device, then call for help. Extricating someone deep within the bush, the middle of the wilderness, is no easy feat. It puts, you know, those folks that are doing it in a great deal of risk just to try and find these people. So I think that it's really the responsibility of folks that want to do this to do it on their own, you know. And I realize that emergencies, you know, things happen, but to go at it from the point of view like, yeah, I can be totally self-sufficient. I can get in and I can get out, no problem.
On our excursion into the unknown, we did have a mishap. It wasn't life-threatening, but it did compromise our objective, and we had to do some problem solving.
I had a little problem marching in here and set the paddle down against a tree and stepped on the working end of the paddle, which then succumbed to my step, and we had to do a major repair job on the paddle when we got here. So now we can go somewhere, but you have to paddle gently. We had to repair it. We didn't have another paddle. Either that or somebody has to swim and push the canoe. And I don't know if we would have had any volunteers.
I do believe that the paddle still had a pulse, and some quick surgery brought it back to life.
It's oftentimes all about duct tape. And here was duct tape again, earning its keep. Fixing the paddle.
Yeah, it's a done deal, and we can move on to the next thing. I'm not going to touch that paddle.
Hi, I'm Ingrid Lyons. I'm the executive director of Save the Boundary Waters, and I'm that person who sends you way too many emails. But also, if you don't get our emails, you should probably go sign up. Save the Boundary Waters is a proud sponsor of Paddle and Portage. We work to protect canoe country so that folks can paddle in Portage in northeastern Minnesota for generations to come. Did you know that the Boundary Waters is America's most visited wilderness? Not only is it one of the country's most iconic and unique landscapes, but its 1.1 million acres of lakes and boreal forests offer something for everyone. People have long found inspiration and strength in the Boundary Waters, and now the wilderness needs you to speak loudly on its behalf. The future of this special place is at risk, threatened by America's most toxic industry, copper mining. Thanks for reading all the emails from us. I know we send a lot, but clearly there's a lot at stake for canoe country. You can make a difference. You already have. Join us in the effort to protect the Boundary Waters for generations to come by visiting our website at savetheboundarywaters.org to learn more.
There's obviously potential for injury on these trips. It could have been a bone that snapped, and not just a paddle. The risk of physical damage doesn't just apply to us. It applies to the landscape, too. Dan from the Tofty Ranger District will be the first to share examples of how traveling off-trail can be done responsibly.
By far, you're going to be lightest on the land in the winter. You've got frozen lakes, you've got frozen ground, and except for this winter, you usually have a pretty good blanket of snow on top. Those are super durable surfaces. You can go anywhere you want and know that sensitive plant communities underneath are largely going to be protected. Even boggy areas that in the summer can hold footprints all year, in the winter, nada. I would say the winter is definitely the time to do exploring. It's easier to see. There's no deciduous foliage up, so your sight lanes are a lot longer. It's easier to navigate. I definitely want to touch on is, you know, not establishing trails. Even to find your way back, no cutting of any vegetation, whether it's dead and down or live, no brushing a trail, no putting in axe blazes, or generally no flagging your route in. We don't want to get a route established. Avoiding wetlands, going for the higher ground. You know, the other season I would say would be actually like the height of summer when it's driest. Springtime is just a lot of moisture in the ground. It's going to hold those imprints a little bit longer. Same with the fall when it starts getting wet again in the fall. So I would say like the height of summer and in the winter would be a preference. But you certainly can do it year-round. You can definitely go back and explore year-round. There's nothing wrong with that. But just to, like, you know, be careful when you're doing it. In the winter, yeah, you can really camp and travel wherever you want. It's a great time to do that exploration. And then in the summer, we definitely have some rules and regs that you have to follow. Bushwhacking is just that. You pull your canoe through or you walk through and try not to leave a trail.
Our trip wasn't flawless. It was hard. In addition to a broken paddle, we got off track, turned around, encountered what felt like impenetrable alder thickets, and our own exhaustion.
If you would have said to me at the beginning of the day today, are we going to make it? I'd be like, oh yeah, we're going to make it. You know, we're just going to make this thing happen.
Yeah.
But then we got going, and it was rough. I mean, that first part that we started on, we kind of got off on a tough pathway, and I just started thinking, like, maybe this isn't going to happen. But then a sweet thing kicked in from sort of past memories. It was like, no, it's just, you know, it's just bite-sized pieces. Don't be looking at the whole thing. Just keep going a little bit more, and we'll get through these. You know, the forest will open up eventually. But so it was that kind of like little emotional swings of like, oh, we totally got this. We're going to make State Lake happen. And then being like, this, yeah, maybe it's not going to. And then we just sort of marched through that. And it did get, it sort of, I think it got easier as we went because the forest opened a little bit for us. And then it would close up, of course, but we just knew we could make it through those areas. But I like that about the wilderness. I mean, you can come out here just thinking like, yeah, I'm a bushwhacker, I can do this stuff, but it'll challenge you and it'll make you question that.
We did, of course, make it to our destination. We found the lake. We repaired the paddle. We paddled to the island and sat on the rocks to share a meal. In that moment, the history, the uncharted terrain, the adventure of it all, came together in a blissful moment.
The reward of going through this area that was logged and significantly altered to get to this lake that was significantly pure.
I would sort of dovetail onto that. I love looking at all those old roads and knowing that a lot of it was cut, and we saw quite a few stumps here and there today. And looking at that forest, though, my gosh, you wouldn't really know it. It took a pretty close eye to, you know, yes, it did look young in a way, I suppose, but only for sort of from looking at a lot of different forests up here. It certainly would have looked young to most people. I mean, it's just totally reclaimed. In those 1934 pictures, they showed these big camps and these skid roads all over the place, and it's, you know, it's basically, you know, you don't really see it at all.
Yeah, that's what, 89 years ago? And that's a constant in the world. And so it was a constant here that it was going to heal itself when allowed to. And around this lake, we can see the forest that was here before because it wasn't cut.
Yeah.
And that just feels richer, you know, that it's still there.
Yeah.
And this island that we're on right now, sitting here, it's got those white pines. It's just idyllic what you think of in the Boundary Waters as islands with the big pines, you know. And we're sitting around enjoying our meal anyway on a camp stove. So, I mean, it isn't all idyllic, but.
There is a certain type of joy and consistency and routine and knowing what to expect. Maybe it's actually more of a contentment, a feeling of safety and stability. We all need that in our lives. But it's the hard things that bring a certain type of satisfaction, joy, and connection when we get to accomplish them with other people. For me, this trip was so much more than I expected. And in some ways, it was for all of us.
Anything that seems really rigorous and taking strength and fortitude and stuff, I'd probably just sort of say that these days, you know, hear it later part of my 50s. You know, when I say something like that, it's a young man's game, you know. Truly, I'm thinking like, man, I still got it. If I'm being honest, I guess. But I'm more careful for sure. But no, I think to me, I want to keep young in heart and mind, and especially in mind, and keep doing this stuff as long as the body allows, because it's where, you know, I get so much enjoyment from being with friends out here and just being in the country in this way. Like I talked about earlier, where you have to use your wits and your know-how and go out and see this gorgeous country. So, yeah, I think it's in every person's game if you go in with the right attitude.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no doubt. I'm on the upper end of our age group here. You know, I'm heading towards my mid-70s, and that's all right, you know. There's nothing wrong with that. And I still can do a lot of things that I enjoy. Maybe I can't do them at the same pace or the same way, but I can still do them, and I feel happy about that. And today, with you two guys, you know, putting up with me so that I could make this happen, that was just great.
Today, you know, I was pushing through some of the harder terrain. You were probably 100 yards ahead of me. And I was like, is that the lake? And you didn't say yes or no. You said, get up here and check things out. And I just started barreling through, pushing that canoe through everything. And the feeling of excitement and joy that consumed my whole body, knowing that we made it to the lake. And it was the most unadulterated, pure bliss. I think I hollered and hooped and hooped and hollered that we made it. And it reminded me of the first time I came in the Boundary Waters. And doing my first portage and getting and it being hard and getting to the other side and seeing the lake, it all came back.
Nice.
And I just can't. I mean, that is a special thing.
Yeah, that's cool. That's awesome.
Not everybody should decide that this is going to be their first adventure.
No.
Because, you know, there's a lot of things you learn along the way that paved the way for this to be something you can do.
Yeah.
You just can't say, okay, I heard these guys do it, I'm gonna go and do the same thing. You put your time in your life doing things that I guess I call them hard all the time.
Yeah.
And those are the things that you really cherish, you know. Everything is just heightened when you really do the work.
Yeah.
And that doesn't always happen. People don't push themselves, and, they just don't get these feelings then. You can't explain it to people totally, so.
You have to experience it.
You have to experience it.
Big shout out to Buck and John for sharing their stories on the podcast and being brave enough to get out there and venture off trail like that. And really cool that you got to link up with two people who have experience to do this kind of thing. And as we heard from both Buck and John, and the Forest Service is like probably not the ideal way to get started in the Boundary Waters. And I think that's a big takeaway that I had from the episode today, is that it's something to build up to, and even then to do with a lot of precautionary measures and just knowledge of wilderness travel and some safety measures in place. Really important stuff, and a beautiful episode today. And it's our third episode on the new platform, something that I sometimes forget about, like that we've been doing this for a while, sharing stories from the Boundary Waters, but this is our third episode, and we can see that people are listening and want to take another moment to acknowledge how grateful we are that people came here to Paddle and Portage and are listening to the podcast and sharing the stories and liking them and subscribing. And please keep doing that. Tell other people to do it. And these stories are just all happening out there. And in many ways, it feels once again like we're just getting started. I'm energized, and that is such a gift.
Absolutely. We've talked endlessly about how in some ways this can feel like a one-way relationship where we get to share a lot with y'all, and we don't always get to hear from you, but know that we love to hear from you, so much so that we pay pretty close attention to how much you're listening, because it's a way that we know you're out there. Even more valuable to us than that is being able to see when you like the podcast, when you subscribe to the podcast, when you rate it, and when you send us your feedback, your messages, your notes of encouragement, and where we can improve. That's valuable and means a lot. So please keep doing it. If you haven't checked it out already, go to paddleandportage.com. Check out the endless information, news, articles, stories, audio. Speaking of, the long-form interview with Dan Dish from the U.S. Forest Service, talking extensively about how to be in the backcountry off-trail. You heard a few nuggets of his wisdom and experience, but there's a lot more good stuff that just didn't make it into the episode, and we want you to be able to hear it. Go to paddleandportage.com to get it all. And if you want a little discount on your subscription, use Baxley10 as a promo code. A little gift from me.
One thing about the analytics of the podcast is we can't tell who it is, individual based, who's listening, but we can sometimes see where people are listening from. And it's so great to see in Canada, in other parts of the U.S., out way outside of Minnesota, East Coast, Oregon, West Coast, California, Washington too, of course, the entire West Coast, and the Twin Cities and Madison. It's just so great to know that people are staying connected to the Boundary Waters through the podcast, and hopefully, as we've heard from pretty much every episode now of the three we've done on Paddle and Portage, learn something. When we look back at the wind episode, you know, how that can make a trip safer and better, and falling through the ice skating, and now with bushwhacking. Like, there's an educational component that's happening through this storytelling, and that has value to me, and hopefully it does to you as well, you listening, who we appreciate, who Matthew's over there on the edge of tears, as usual, probably about to have a breakdown, so we better just sign off for the day.
We love you!
We're gonna have to get the Kleenex. Somebody get the Kleenex.